Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is May 9th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotorVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. I did realize just yesterday that I believe I neglected to upload last week's episode. So within the next 48 hours, I will definitely upload last week and this week. Also wanted to just express appreciation for we had a couple listeners, and in particular, Scott, I mentioned this to you before we came on, that submitted ideas for future calls, and I love that. I really appreciate that for a couple reasons. Number one, it makes it, you know, it is nice to know that you guys find value in this and that you have suggestions on what could help the industry. I do want this call to definitely be about you guys and about the people in the industry, and so it's nice to hear the feedback and hear what you guys want to talk about. So Scott had several topics that he submitted that we will put on the roster. Also, frankly, helps me in trying to come up with ideas. You know, we do roughly 45, 46 of these calls a year, and it's kind of nice to come up with, you know, to have the topics, have to hear what you guys want to talk about. There's some really good ones, so I appreciate that very much. Going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, and which is by asking, was there anything that we learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? We are going to be talking about experiences in D.C. In a little bit, but anything beyond D.C. that anybody learned or heard or want to share? Kelly?
Morning.
Hey.
Paul.
Good morning, Paul. Hey, you made it in. Okay. So thank you for the text message. It worked okay. So, yeah, Paul, what's up?
Apparently. Well, one thing that sort of has to do with D.C. but doesn't, I learned it in D.C., but it doesn't have anything to do with why we were there.
Yeah,
is I had an opportunity to talk to Frank De Silva from ResinTech.
Oh, yeah.
And asked him some information about, and we talked about PFAS. And I was asking about methods to remove it and so forth. And he was saying, for example, that while they do make, I say, a specialized resin for removing PFAS, he said, if you just put in an anion resin, it's going to grab a fair amount of the PFAS.
Wow.
And
okay.
Same thing with carbon. And he also said that you can't regenerate it, the resin. You know, you run sodium chloride through, it's not coming off the resin. And it doesn't dump also, which is frequently an issue with especially anion resin. But,
so what is dumping for people that may not be aware, Paul? What is dumping?
Yeah. So for example, let's say you put in an anion resin to take out arsenic. Arsenic is fairly strongly held by the resin, unless something comes through which the resin prefers to arsenic, like sulfate, and also in most cases is present at a much higher level in the water, higher concentration. So you might have arsenic, for example, in parts per billion. You might have sulfates in parts per million. And so if that happens, depending upon how long you leave the resin in service, eventually you will start to see the resin displace the arsenic
right
that was previously removed. And the rate at which it displaces it is not based on how much arsenic was in the water. It's based on how much sulfate is in the water. So you can have this phenomena where if you were monitoring the quality, you would see that the arsenic level after the resin was super high based on how much sulfate is in the water. So I was asking him about, will that potentially occur with PFAS? And he said, no, it won't do that. You're not going to get it off the resin once it's there. I said, well, what about
So you can't, it's not going to come off when you backwash it. It's not going to come off when you regenerate it. He said, nope, it's on there. And I said, what about carbon? He said, nope, same thing with carbon. Because carbon grabs it, the carbon hangs on to it. I mean, yeah. I'm not saying like in a leach, I'm not saying like in a, if you dumped it into a landfill, but when it's
right.
in use in the customer's home,
right.
if you backwash the carbon or you backwash the resin, it's not coming off.
Right.
So it was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, what it was really interesting, you know, in terms of the PFAS, and this again, some of the stuff that we did learn because we spent some time there in D.C., it was that conversation, I was party to some of that conversation there with Frank that you had, Paul, and that was really – the guy, if you guys have never met Frank DeSilva, he's probably – water geek specializing in resin geekiness, and, man, he's a guy that – You want to know if you have a resin question. He just understands how this stuff works and has a way of explaining it really well. And he's just super willing to share the information and everything too. But it was kind of interesting, you know, talking to him. We talked a few weeks ago, and just in the same, you know, in the line of learning something new. Paul, you and I were looking at a softener in the specs when we were down in Orlando about, you know, talking about there was a softener that had the certified efficiency ratings that were nearly as high. It was a downflow unit downflow brining, right, downflow brining, that had efficiencies that you would normally only see with a countercurrent unit using proportional brining. And if anybody is uncertain of what those terms are, let me know. But it was kind of interesting. And in doing the research, what the manufacturer of that unit said was that it was they were able to achieve those efficiencies using a second backwash. So typically on a softener, if it's set up as a post-fill unit, you're going to have your first cycle is going to be backwash, and then you've got your brine draw and your slow rinse. And then some manufacturers have an option for a second backwash, and you can adjust the time of that. And then you go fast rinse, which is downflow, and then brine refill. And what this manufacturer said was that they were able to achieve those efficiencies, the similar efficiencies with a downflow unit, a downflow brine unit, as a unit using upflow brining, countercurrent regeneration, and proportional brining, because of that second backwash, because it basically stratified the bed. Now, what I learned from that is, yes, you can. What Frank had mentioned is yes, you can increase the efficiency by doing that, and it certainly made sense. If I have a downflow unit now, he said, all you need is a burp. You just need to push the bottom resin up to the top, so that second backwash should only be set to about a minute, because any longer than that, and basically, you're just using you're using the capacity of the resin that's just been generated, you know, because it is done with hard water. But he said you just need about a minute on that second backwash, and that will help significantly increase the efficiencies. He said, however, any downflow unit is going to give you a little bit of bleed through. Now, for most manufacturers, if they don't have iron in the water, that grain of bleed through with a countercurrent or with a co-current unit is not that big a deal. If you are in an area where you're dealing with a lot of iron, suddenly, I mean, that doesn't matter what the efficiencies are. You don't want that iron bleed through coming through, and you're a lot less likely to have iron bleed through with a countercurrent regenerated unit. But it was just interesting to actually understand what was happening, and okay, they're able to achieve that, but how do you actually set it to achieve those numbers? So this all highlights the importance of going to these events, you know, whether they are local WQA events or you know, your state or regional WQA events, whether they are the DC fly-in or national WQA or you know, Jen, you mentioned before we started recording that you're headed down to Nelson's open house today. You know, that's every time you have an opportunity to brush shoulders with people from our industry, I would absolutely 100% encourage you to do so, because that's where you're going to find those learning opportunities. You know, so any questions on anything I just said? I actually made those statements assuming everybody on this call understands proportional brining and countercurrent regeneration and upflow, you know, and all of that stuff and salt efficiency. So there's a lot more technical, it's not really a good assumption, because there very well may be people on this call who do not understand what those terms mean. And if that's the case, please feel free to reach out to us. We can certainly go in and explain all of that stuff and you know, and have it make sense to you. But I've said it before, I will continue to say it, that one of the things that I absolutely love about this industry are just how often I learn something new. Even after nearly, you know, 26 years of being in this industry, almost 27 years, I'm just amazed at how often I learn something that I didn't know the week before. Anybody else have anything there? Or questions about any of it? So let's kind of segue into our topic. So who on the call was in D.C.? So I know, Paul, obviously you were, but and Jen, you were. But anybody else on the call that was there this week? So I'll open it up. Jen, you and Paul, I know you were there. Tell me your thought.
I thought it was fabulous. I had a total of 6 meetings. The people that were in my group, one gentleman had been there before, and then there was a gal in New York. She's on Long Island. She actually has not been there before. And all of the so when you go to D.C., you go into these meetings, the thing that So what we were going there for is to let them know, representatives, senators, we want them to know that the Water Quality Association is an excellent resource for questions that they have. Because, you know, I talked to somebody that was in the elevator. They're there for infrastructure. I talked to somebody else. They're with pharmaceuticals. Talked to somebody else. I mean, there are so many things that people are going and asking every single day. And, you know, there's a lot that they have to learn. And so we wanted to make sure that they understand that we are a resource for them. The Water Quality Association is a resource for them when they have questions about water issues. So, but our main ask was the Healthy H2O Act. And the Healthy H2O Act is what we discussed last year. It's been attached to the Farm Bill, and we are asking for a grant that will help private well owners or municipalities, daycares, so on, under 10,000 people. And what this would do is it will allow us to pay for testing and equipment and maintenance, which is probably the most important part of the equipment. And our ask was $10 million per year for the length of the bill, which is supposed to only be 5 years. It just so happens that this time it's 6 years because the new one hasn't been passed. But it's $10 million per year. As we all know, is $10 million isn't going to go really far. $50 million might not go really far, but it's a start. And it hopefully we'll be able to get this bill and have it on its own in the future. But I think everybody was, everyone we spoke to, usually we're speaking to the staffers, and they were very well receptive to it. I had a gal in Michigan, Haley Stevens, and she remembered me from last year. She comes running in, Jennifer, and she says, okay, what are you doing Monday night? And I said, I think I'm in town. She says, okay, we're going to go to the township meeting, and we're going to talk about water. And she had other few choice words to say about water first water, but she says, let's go do it. Let's kick some butt. So yeah. It was just, it was very cool.
So I found, so Jen, this was your second one. How did it compare with last year's when you went?
So last year I felt like I talked to more actual representative senators.
Yeah.
But I compared, I felt like they had more knowledge on what we were talking about. Like, we would go in and they're like, yeah, we remember it was a House bill last year, now it's a Senate bill. But they just seemed to remember what we brought to them last year.
Yeah. So I found it, so this was, I think, my sixth or seventh time. I'd have to go back. I mean, we didn't go during the zombie apocalypse. And let me back up here. For those of you that have never been on the D.C. fly-in, let me just explain to you what the process is. Basically, it's usually 2 days. Well, the first day you go, I got to talk about that. Paul and I, we flew in on Monday at the same time, and we had an opportunity to – we had on our call a couple months ago, Dan Connor from FlavorX, and we had an opportunity to tour his factory and plant, and he was very gracious, and that was super cool. If you missed that call, that podcast, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to it. What they do is very interesting. But we flew in, but the actual DC fly-in, the summit part, the first day on Tuesday was mostly just hearing from, we heard from the, EPA administrators and officials and people from National Groundwater and it was a day of education, and you're basically sitting in the room, and kind of listening and learning. But yesterday was the day where we go to Capitol Hill, and you're right, Jen. You know, they had a lot going on Capitol Hill, you know, so a lot of the members, those are the senators and the congresspeople, they were, this was the first year that we talked to very as few as we did in our meetings here, because most of them are on the floor and they're voting and they're a lot of the staff are dealing with appropriations at this time of the year. It's an election year, and that does have an impact on how much attention people are putting into these things. With all the times that I've been there, some meetings, I mean, we've gone into some meetings before, and people are just sort of, it's like, ho-hum, I have to go through these motions, who cares? But then there are others that are just really, this is one of their niche ideas, and they're just really looking for solutions. One of the things that we have to remember when we go in and we talk to these people is that it's really the staff that sort of help guide the members on what to do. So those meetings with the staffers, they're the permanent people, right? They're the ones that they stay in D.C. They work for different Congress people. And so even if they're working for one particular member of Congress that is not particularly interested in what you're doing, it's still beneficial to kind of explain to them what's going on, because they may get a job with another staffer in the next term, or that member may be, retire or no longer in Congress. So it is interesting, but the other thing you have to remember is most of the people that are there, these guys are lawyers, guys and gals, they're lawyers, or they're business people, or they're not tradespeople. They're not people that in many cases, that's very stereotypical, of course, but in many cases, they're not people that understand what a water softener is or what a point of use or point of entry. I mean, they, you know, and so they require somebody to, and they're dealing with a ton of issues. So it is educational for them on a somewhat rudimentary level. And sometimes when you go and you meet with them, it is, sometimes it's more effective than other times. Sometimes you definitely, you get a feel a little bit for the ones that are just genuinely interested in using and recognizing that there are resources available. They're taking notes, they're asking questions. And then you do occasionally run into others where you can tell this is part of their job and they're just counting the hours till they get to go home. You know, and it's not a perfect world, you know. And I think the time of year that we go, I mean, yesterday when we were on Hill, there were so many junior high school tours going on and, you know, end of the year DC tours and there was obviously a lot of stuff. I actually had an opportunity to see, you know, a press conference with Mike Johnson out on Capitol Hill, and there was a guy out there screaming, and I thought that I was going to get to see Capitol Police tackle this guy because he was out there screaming obscenities at the Speaker of the House, and it was an interesting D.C. experience in that way. Paul, this was your first time. What were your thoughts in general of going out there?
It was an interesting experience. It was eye-opening. I hadn't been in Washington, D.C. I mean, I was born there, but I had no recollection of it. So it was fascinating from that perspective. I probably derived more from the interaction among the participants from WQA than, for example, the meetings that I was in with the staff. I didn't feel that the ones that we had were the staffers were all that engaged. It was sort of, some of them seemed engaged and some of them seemed like, okay, we have this meeting, so we're going to do it. But not as though their interest was particularly genuine on what we were trying to discuss. So, you know, mixed in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had years like that. And like I said, I think for me this year, I probably experienced more of what you're talking about there than I have in previous years. And I think a lot of it had to do with the timing, you know, the time of the year that we went and the other things that were going on in Capitol Hill. But that's why we all kind of go and spread out and do that stuff because, you know, as Jen's saying, she found tremendous response with the people that she spoke. And there were about half and half with the groups that I was in as well. I mean, we had two meetings in particular where I really felt like we made some headway. I think this experience, you know, even if it's not something you put on your agenda to go to every year, this experience is something that I encourage you to look into doing, because it is an important part of what we need to do. It's making sure that people understand that we are there and that we are a resource and that it's part of it. I mean, when you think about what an association is for, and this is, you know, the Water Quality Association, we've talked about this a little bit before, Dave Loveday kind of taught me this, that the purpose of an association, its sole purpose, its number one purpose is to advocate for legislation, you know, to its legislative influence. That's the whole reason associations should exist, is to help protect the industry and the members of the industry and by extension, the consumers and the people who are using our products and services. And that the strength of an association is only as strong as its membership, which is why when people ask me, you know, why should I be part of the Water Quality Association? Well, even if you're never going to D.C., if you are a member and you're involved in these associations, that allows us to go to DC and to say, look, we have, you know, over 2,500 member companies in the Water Quality Association, you know, which comes out to be, you know, tens of thousands of voting, you know, voters spread out all over the country. And, you know, and that makes we talk about, you know, we did talk a little bit about PFAS and the regulations and learning that stuff, but we also, you know, talked about the importance of using certified products and using certified personnel to install and service and, you know, and educate consumers about those products. And so the more they hear that message consistently from an organization that is stronger because of its membership, the better that is for, you know, it does have an impact on everybody, whether you've ever gone to DC or whether you've ever, even if, you know, your job is just, you know, and I don't mean this to sound derogatory in any way, but if your job is sales and that's what you do and you're working with your company, what we did over the last couple of days does roll down and have an impact on your job because it impacts the entire industry. Any questions? We have about three minutes left here. Any questions or thoughts or comments on any of this stuff or this particular topic?
Kelly, how many steps did you get on your Fitbit?
I was looking at that this morning. So, you know, so I did on last weekend, Jen, I went for a hike. You know, I went backpacking. And the middle day, Saturday, I had over 30,000 steps, you know, just because I did close to 10 miles. But the rest of the days, I had roughly 20,000 steps. So I was looking at it in comparison to DC, and I averaged almost 20,000 steps each day that I was there. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Yesterday I had 18,324. So it is a lot of steps walking back and forth. There's a lot of walking.
It was 28,000 for both days, day of the summit, and it was 10.73 miles that I walked yesterday.
Yeah, just there's a lot of walking going from
the bag.
Yeah. Well, that's because people, you see the Capitol building on TV or whatever, but, and Paul, that was something that I think you kind of realized that you do see the dome and the big building, but the Capitol is actually made up of several buildings and smaller buildings that are just basically square boxes. And when you have meetings sometimes, just because of scheduling, you're zigzagging back and forth between these buildings, and sometimes it's a mile walk in between them. To go. So yes, there's definitely some walking when you go. It's for sure.
Well,
so,
especially when you go to the wrong building and
realize that happened,
Paul. The opposite of where you thought.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, yeah. It definitely. If fortunately, I was with on my team was with somebody that knew Capitol Hill pretty well, had been there. But I was with Jordan Carey from WQA. But yeah. Anyway, guys, thank you, those of you that were just kind of listening in on for listening to this, what I think is an interesting conversation, but is probably not what everybody's doing, but I do feel like it's an important part of what we do. But anyway, that is our time. Thanks, everybody. Be safe. Have a great weekend. We will talk to you next week, if not before. So thank you, everybody.